You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Welcome to Pentecost, yet another holiday that Christianity has appropriated from another faith tradition. Originally, in the Jewish tradition, Pentecost takes place 50 days after Passover. In Greek, Pentecoste literally means 50th. In Judaism, it was and still is a harvest festival that commemorates the giving of the law to Moses on Mount Sinai. Traditionally, this giving of the Ten Commandments is the moment in which the Jewish people are created. So, for Christians, Pentecost celebrates the coming of the Spirit upon the followers of Jesus, the act which creates the church. Acts was written near the end of the first century by the same person who wrote the Gospel of Luke and is filled with all kinds of symbolic language drawn from the Jewish tradition. As the author tells the story, the Spirit came upon the community with the sound of a rushing wind and with tongues of fire resting on each of them. So this is the one Sunday of the year where red is the liturgical color. What might not be immediately apparent in the long list of peoples whose languages are being spoken is that it gives away that this Pentecost gathering is not history, but metaphor. The very diversity of this ethnic gathering makes it historically impossible. The Medes, who Luke says were there that day, would have had to travel not a few hundred miles, but a couple of hundred years. The Medes had been long extinct. So too the Elamites. So this is about the Spirit being present not only in every place, but in every time. And it's very publicly on about one thing.
Our words of wisdom are from Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, the Message version.
When the feast of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Without warning, there was a sound like a strong wind, gale force. No one could tell where it came from. It filled the whole building.
Then, like a wildfire, the Holy Spirit spread through their ranks, and they started speaking in a number of different languages, as the Spirit prompted them.
There were many Jews staying in Jerusalem just then, devout pilgrims from all over the world. When they heard the sound, they came on the run.
Then, when they heard one another in their own mother tongues being spoken, they were thunderstruck.
They couldn't for the life of them figure out what was going on and kept saying, "Aren't these all Galileans? How come we're hearing them talk in our own various mother tongues?"
Parthians, Medes, and Elamites, visitors from Mesopotamia, Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya belonging to Cyrene, immigrants from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, even Cretans and Arabs. They're speaking our languages, describing God's mighty works.
Their heads were spinning. They couldn't make head or tail of any of it. They talked back and forth, confused. "What's going on here?" Others joked, "They're drunk on cheap wine."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
On July 3, 1981, nine mountain climbers managed to summit Washington State's 14,410-foot Mount Rainier in record time. This only a few days after an icefall had buried and killed 11 other climbers on that same mountain. Oh, and did I mention? Five were blind, two were deaf, one was epileptic, and one, a Vietnam vet, had an artificial leg. In spite of their physical challenges, they managed to climb up and down Mount Rainier without mishap. When asked how they'd achieved such an extraordinary feat, one of the blind climbers offered the understatement, "We got a lot of help from each other." You think? They got a lot of help from each other. So, of course, I couldn't think of a better day to remember an accomplishment like this than Pentecost, a day when an outpouring of the Spirit broke down language barriers, prejudices of exclusion, and defied every expectation of the status quo. And remember, because these Jesus people were doing something that the know-it-alls never imagined possible, their only response was to diss them with claims that, well, they got to be drunk. And it's the same today. If this hackneyed old chestnut of a holiday is to have any relevance for going forward, we need to reclaim it for what it originally meant. It's a symbolic moment of radical egalitarianism, the breaking down of language, cultural, and interpersonal barriers, the likes of which no one had ever seen. This was not only a diverse gathering of people from nations across the known world geographically, but across time itself. And to top it all off, the next step was something that makes capitalists nervous. But it's right there as one of the primary characteristics of being a follower of Jesus. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Let me say that again, because this is something that white middle-class Americans living in late-stage capitalism resist hearing. The first followers of Jesus sold whatever they owned and pooled their resources so that each person's need was met. They held everything in common. Parthians, Medes, and Elamites, visitors from Mesopotamia, Judea, and Cappadocia, Afghanistan, Chad, Republic of Congo, Haiti, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, even Yemen and Venezuela. No matter how you slice it, Pentecost casts a vision of a society where people are not banned, but where all people are equal and included. Barriers are broken down to include people of all nations, cultures, and languages. A clear rejection of the kind of homogenous us versus them society that today's white Christian nationalists and MAGA cult members are touting as their ideal. The original Pentecost was a wake-up call, and the Spirit's arrival was anything but gentle. It arrived like wind and fire to shake things up. And guess what? The guardians of the status quo were not happy. They arrested the apostles, threw them in jail, and threatened them to stop promoting this newfangled way of life. But the followers of Jesus refused. Why? Because they'd been awakened to a new way of living. And once they'd seen it, they couldn't unsee it. What came upon Jesus' followers that first Pentecost was about being spiritually alive, socially aware, and courageously engaged with what really matters in the world. They'd become the first century equivalent of woke. And it's still a threat 2,000 years later. I've heard tell of clergy preaching on the Beatitudes only to be confronted by angry parishioners over how they don't agree with such woke ideologies. Never mind that the Beatitudes are Jesus' clear instructions on how to live together. And never mind that they have no idea what woke even means. Some people, mostly partisan white folk whip it out like it's a curse word. Unaware of its deep roots, they hurl it at others as a kind of blanket condemnation. So let me get you caught up. Woke actually originated as African-American slang, meaning to be awake to social and political injustices, especially racism. Back in 1939, 9 black teens, the Scottsboro Boys, were falsely accused of raping 2 white women and were sentenced to death. After years of appeal, most of the boys remained sentenced to long prison terms, only having been saved from the death penalty. They were totally innocent. 2 of them were only 12 and 13 years old, but their experience was common across the Jim Crow South. So a few years later, shouldn't be a surprise that black folk singer Leadbelly wrote a song about the Scottsboro Boys, in which he urged his listeners to stay alert to racial injustice. In his gruff shorthand, stay woke. Fast forward to the 1960s and 70s, and woke evolved as a way to describe someone who was conscious, informed, and politically engaged, particularly about systemic oppression. Then came a resurgence in the 2010s when staying woke became associated with the Black Lives Matter movement, encouraging awareness of police brutality and institutional racism. But today, to be woke has been stripped of its original meaning and has been politicized and weaponized as a catch-all insult for progressive ideals. Politicians, preachers, and pundits advertise their ignorance of and heartlessness towards those whom they consider the other by dismissing their opinions, their circumstances, and even their existence by just a wave of the hand and a dismissive utterance of the word woke. So to be clear, because being woke is about big scary things like moral clarity, communal vigilance, and resistance to injustice, people who are arguably asleep have co-opted it as an insult for anything that smacks of progressive thinking. Never mind that some of the oldest texts in the New Testament argue that being woke is essential. Stay awake and watch, says Mark, while Paul tells the Romans, it is now the hour for you to wake from sleep. And those of us who have tried to change people's minds know firsthand that it's going to take something pretty dramatic to wake these people up to the suffering of others and the lies that they've accepted as truth. What we know that the sleepers can't begin to understand is that wokeness isn't a slur at all. It's not a condition to be remedied. Just like on Pentecost, it's a sign of the Spirit doing its job. Back in 1960, John F. Kennedy was the Democratic nominee for president and was responding to growing criticism from moderates that he was just too liberal for most voters. But rather than reject the label to run away from it, he redefined it. And many of you will recognize elements of just how he did it. He said, if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, and their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say I'm a liberal. Kennedy reframed liberalism, not as a radicalism with which his opponents could whip up fear and mistrust, but as a commitment to progress, justice, and pragmatic compassion. So what if for Pentecost, we did the same for staying woke? If by woke, they mean someone who chooses to stay awake rather than sleepwalk through injustice, someone who listens to new voices instead of clinging to old prejudices, someone who believes that healthcare, housing, education, jobs, civil rights, and human dignity matter, then I'm proud to say I'm woke. Friends, if being woke means refusing to be numb to suffering or silent in the face of cruelty or satisfied with the status quo, then count me in. I want to stay woke because I believe a more just, more loving, more awakened world is still possible. Meanwhile, Senator Joni Ernst channels MAGA cruelty last week, telling constituents who are facing the loss of Medicare and Medicaid to essentially suck it up, we're all gonna die. Instead, I choose with Bishop Desmond Tutu to stay awake to the fact that we are made for togetherness, for fellowship, to live in a delicate network of interdependence. With Jesus and the prophets of old, I choose to stay woke to the cry of the poor and the immigrant, woke to systems that exploit, woke to the sacred in every human being, and woke to the dismantling of the hard-won progress that we've achieved as a culture. Case in point, just this week, to kick off Pride Month, no less, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, who probably is drunk on cheap wine, ordered the renaming of the USNS Harvey Milk, a ship named after Navy veteran and slain gay rights leader Harvey Milk. Christened in 2021, the ship was named to honor Milk's legacy as one of the first openly gay elected officials in the United States and his service in the Navy during the Korean War. Oh, but it doesn't stop there. Other ships under review for renaming include those named for Thurgood Marshall, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Harriet Tubman, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, Lucy Stone, and Medgar Evers, all individuals who made significant contributions to the civil rights, social justice, and equality movements in America. How is this erasure of people that are deemed contrary to the warrior culture not just a vindictive silencing of those with different voices? It's essentially a reverse Pentecost. Friends, Pentecost wasn't about establishing a homogeneous community, validating some hyper-individualized assurance of God's love. It was a very public disruption of comfort zones, of biases, and of pious bubbles of exclusion that inaugurated a newfound spirit of radical hospitality and unity across racial and cultural divides. It was a divine disruption of indifference. And if we're doing Jesus following right, then Pentecost's wake-up call can't be left on the page as a one-time spiritual event. It needs to be a model for today, a model for moral and communal transformation that prioritizes justice, interdependence, and unity in diversity as the truth the world is longing for. As theologian Miroslav Volf reminds us, the Spirit of God leads us into the truth, And the truth is that we belong together. On Pentecost, we remember the Holy Spirit coming like fire, like wind, a breath of life invigorating the exhausted and the excluded, awakening the community to break down the walls that divide us. In contrast, the foul wind of today's politics exhales cruelty and neglect, seeking to suffocate the vulnerable and exclude the other. After Pentecost, Peter didn't bask in the smug assurance of God's approval. He was too woke for that. Instead, he rebuked the corrupt powers defending the same kind of tribalism and hyper-nationalism that we're facing today. And his actions are a direct call for us to take action, resisting the powers that be, because we're woke too. In these days of turmoil, I find myself meditating on one of the heroes of my youth, Atticus Finch, one of the main characters in Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Atticus is an attorney who was modeled after the attorneys who defended the Scottsboro Boys. Harper Lee didn't use the words stay woke, but her novel is a literary wake-up call to readers, especially white Southerners of the 1960s, to wake up to the reality of systemic racism. Through the story of Atticus, Scout, and Tom Robinson, Lee exposes injustice, critiques racial blindness, and makes it impossible for readers to look away from reality. And while she's not one of the main characters, Scout's neighbor, Miss Maudie, speaks a truth we all need to hear. There are some men in this world who were born to do our unpleasant jobs for us. Your father's one of them. Atticus sees injustice, and instead of ignoring it, he acts. He's awake to the moral rot around him. And that's the challenge for us today. Can we be awake enough to what's going on around us to do the unpleasant job of resistance, of agitation for what's right? Friends, on the first Pentecost, the Spirit essentially reversed the confusion of the Tower of Babel, creating understanding and connection out of division and suspicion. We're called to do the same. As a church and as individuals, we need to stay woke to the cruelty of budget cuts that harm the poor and elderly, policies that exclude immigrants and target trans people, to rhetoric that normalizes cruelty and actions that erase people from history. The essence of Pentecost is about the transformative power of the Spirit in the real world. Jesus' first followers lived in politically charged environments too, and they knew what many conventional Christians avoid facing today. Jesus' vision has social and political implications. Applying our faith today isn't about partisanship, but about living out the values of justice, compassion, and inclusion that Pentecost represents. The Spirit builds community not through walls and enforcing uniformity, but through a radical awareness of our interdependence and a commitment to Jesus' call that says no one should go without care, food, dignity, or recognition as a fellow human being. Pentecost is nothing if not a divine rude awakening. Think leaf blower at 5 a.m. kind of awakening. And now that you're awake, stay woke. Even though some of us are blind, deaf, epileptic, or down to one leg, stay together. Just like those climbers and just like that first Pentecost. Now's the time to stay awake and get a lot of help from each other. Be well.
Hey, and if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Shukran, Atul.
Shukran, thank you. Do it.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.